The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Now, Hannah McCarthy, who has been joining us regularly from Beirut in recent weeks, is back in studio with me in Dublin. We'll hear from Declan Power in a second. But I want to start with Alex Thompson, chief correspondent of Channel 4 News, who is in Israel today, 1 year after the October 7 attacks by Hamas, which has led to this violent retaliation by Israel, which has taken at least 40,000 lives in Gaza and Lebanon. Alex, what has been happening today in Israel? Because I believe there have been a sustained Hezbollah attack on the country.
Yes, there has been sustained rockets into the country. In terms of what's been happening, I think the news agenda within the country will obviously be overtaken by the commemorations across Israel, and particularly down at the site of the music festival close to the Gaza Strip and the various kibbutzes nearby to there, which were so severely damaged in the Hamas original attack on October the 7th last year. Those events, particularly where the Nova Music Festival happened, broadcast live across the nation in a fairly heady mix, I think quite deliberately so, from the part of the government of emotion and politics, a degree of PR there as well, I think, very much in the mix.
To try and justify the continued conflict on seven fronts, as Benjamin Netanyahu called it today. What are those seven fronts at this stage?
Well, we can run through those fronts. I'm not sure I'll get to seven with you live off the top of my head, but obviously it started with Gaza, and then it's extended into Lebanon, of course, and you're talking 42,000 plus lives at the very least in terms of those two fronts. There have been attacks into Syria. There have been by Israel. There have been attacks on Houthi positions over in Yemen. There have been attacks into Iraq. And there have been, we are waiting day by day for the promised reprisal, retaliation by Israel on Iran after Iran fired some 181 ballistic missiles into Israel, of course, back on Tuesday evening.
How well is Israel managing to defend the rockets been fired at it? The Iron Dome defense mechanism, is that working as it wants?
How on earth do you know? I mean, frankly, you know, but what you get, I mean, I witnessed that attack closely, and you believe what you want to believe, that it is impossible to prove very much beyond the fact we know from that attack, for instance, we had 181 missiles fired. We know that several landed just north, for instance, of Tel Aviv. We know that one individual, ironically enough, perhaps a black irony here, a Palestinian man in the West Bank was killed by falling debris. The Israelis took some days to admit it, but they have said that two of their air bases were hit, though their operation was not interrupted by missiles. So it's clear Iron Dome does prevent the greater part of these coming. And it's not just them, of course, it's the Americans defending Israel, and to some extent the British as well, right? Small extent, but to some extent they're in there and want to be seen to be in there. A small amount of missiles certainly do get through, though.
Indeed. And as this continues, do you get the sense in Israel today that there remains popular support for what is being done by the Israeli Defense Forces? Or are there a significant number of people who feel that the response has been disproportionate and only invites further attacks on Israel?
I think they're both true, and it depends what you define as significant. Benjamin Netanyahu began this war, frankly, a year ago, as somebody who faced two choices, war or prison, power or prison, if you like, because he was looking at serious corruption charges once the war was over. I think the situation has changed to some significant degree now. His popularity has grown and grown. The startling strikes on Hamas, of course, not necessarily improving his popularity, but it's what he's done very rapidly. These extraordinary strikes on the Hezbollah leadership north of Israel in Lebanon, of course, those astonishing intelligence-led attacks on the pagers and the killing of Hassan Saeed Hassan Nasrallah, the former leader of Hezbollah. That's had a startling and galvanizing effect across Israel in terms of support for the war. The very real possibility that what they thought was an extraordinarily powerful alliance against them, controlled by Iran, might not be quite as powerful as they once thought. And that, of course, plays into the power and the stock of Benjamin Netanyahu.
Alex Thompson, Chief Correspondent, Channel 4 News, thank you for joining us from Israel this evening. Hannah McCarthy has been on the programme a number of times in recent weeks from Beirut, thankfully back safely in Dublin. Good to see you, Hannah. What sort of impression did you get from people as things have changed in recent weeks? Were they shocked in Beirut to suddenly find themselves in the middle of Israel's response to what happened a year ago?
So over the last couple of years in Lebanon, there have been kind of flare-ups along, you know, the southern border. People have always kind of feared maybe something might happen. But in general, people had a kind of sense that, you know, we're safe in Beirut, you know, it won't get too bad. And I think, you know, there was this sense, you know, after a year of a kind of more contained conflict that still was killing people, had displaced, you know, almost 100,000 people from southern Lebanon. I think there was still a sense in Beirut that the war had been contained there. And, you know, if something was going to escalate, it would have happened by now. I think no one thought we would still be at this point a year later where things, you know, are even worse than we could have imagined back in October 2023. But there is real fear now in Beirut. And I mean, people who I think would have been quite blasé about the risk, are talking about how they fear, you know, if they'll survive. You hear loud blasts across the city, you know, the strikes that hit Hassan Nasrallah. I mean, they shook windows, you know, on the farthest east part of the city, on the opposite corner. So I think people feel increasingly unsafe. And I think it has changed people's perception. I think it's also, you know, I was in Ukraine for the war, and I was also in Israel right after the 7th of October. And in Israel, you have the Iron Dome, you have, you know, an app that warns you about the missile strikes. You also have, you know, not a sophisticated defense system in Ukraine, but you do have buildings with shelters. But I think Lebanon, people feel uniquely vulnerable because of how dysfunctional the state is. The fact that there's so few ways out of the country. The airport is the main way. In the 2006 war, people could go to Damascus and fly out there. So people feel, I think, particularly vulnerable.
Sorry, that's not available to them now, is it?
For foreigners in general, you need to have a visa. It's not straightforward. And again, people are taking a risk, depending on your background, going into Syria. I know some NGOs, their backup plan is, you know, they'll send aid workers across the border to Syria. But in recent days, one of the main routes into Syria has been bombed. So I think there is growing fear there.
And if people have to leave southern Lebanon because they're afraid of what the Israeli forces are going to do, and if they're having to leave Beirut because they're afraid of bombing of Beirut, where do they go?
I mean, it's a good question. I mean, there are very few options. And, you know, I was talking to someone in Beirut recently, and they said, you know, the 2006 war, the Lebanese passport was pretty good. People could go elsewhere. It wasn't too hard to travel out of the country. And because of the economic crisis in Lebanon, it's extremely hard to leave. The infrastructure is terrible. I mean, people were in public schools. And again, there's an issue because it hosts, you know, over a million Syrian refugees. There's also issues with, you know, vulnerable populations who are not being allowed access to even these public shelters. And, you know, I went to a shelter that was being set up at a church run by a Jesuit priest there, and he says, you know, every day we have 100 people arriving at our shelter and we just have to turn them away because that's like the level of need.
The excuse that Israel has given for its bombardment of Gaza has been that Hamas has infiltrated itself amongst the civilian population. How extensive is Hezbollah in Lebanon?
I think the majority of Lebanese people don't support Hezbollah. At the same time, I think if we look at kind of contexts where you have a foreign aggressor like Israel, most people will hold Israel responsible for devastation within the country, you know, particularly, you know, when we see, you know, the high death toll from the last 3 weeks. Hezbollah came out of the Israeli occupation of southern Lebanon in the 1980s. And it's originally seen as, you know, a force that successfully ousted Israeli forces after, you know, a long-term occupation. In more recent years, again, my experience when I got to Lebanon was, I think it had turned into a more sinister force by then. It was, you know, assassinating political opponents, even critics from the Lebanese Shia community that it mostly draws its members from. And it had grown into a more expansive organization. It had schools, hospitals in its own area. It wasn't, you know, delivering them to the rest of the country. It doesn't have an interest in, you know, ruling, you know, Sunnis or Christians in Lebanon, but it does have an interest in, you know, ensuring that its own community, the Lebanese Shia, have, you know, a certain amount of resources. It has members in parliament. It has ministers in the government. So it is a influential organization. It doesn't necessarily want to control or govern all of Lebanon, but it certainly wants to have influence over decisions that matters to it.
Israel seems determined to wipe out Hezbollah. It seems to think it can do that, like it thinks it can do that with Hamas. But is there a danger that in doing so, that it is actually whipping up further anti-Semitic sentiment, which could put its own position in the future at more risk?
I mean, I think, you know, there have been, you know, wars between Hezbollah and Lebanon before, and we are still here.
And Israel.
Sorry, Israel and Hezbollah before. I mean, you know, Israel occupied southern Lebanon for 20 years and, you know, it created Hezbollah. There was a war, you know, in 2006 where, you know, it you know, damaged infrastructure across Lebanon, and, you know, Hezbollah was stronger last year than it was before. I don't think there's any, unless there is some sort of political alternative to Hezbollah, some strengthening of the Lebanese state that makes, you know, an alternative to Hezbollah, you know, attractive to Lebanese Shia and the other Lebanese that also may view them as a protective force. I don't see them going away.
Let's bring in Declan Power, because we also have Irish soldiers who are on peacekeeping duties in Lebanon to worry about. And what did you make of, over the weekend, President Michael D. Higgins condemning Israel for threatening UNIFIL soldiers, but also then UNIFIL today is essentially saying that there was not a threat. It was merely a suggestion from the Israelis that they might move themselves to a different place.
Hi, Matt. Yeah, we all know what the suggestion was meant by the what was implicit in that suggestion by the Israelis. They would like to have UNIFIL forces out of their hair, out of the way, to give them a free hand to engage in their operations. However, the statement from the UN is a reminder to us of how delicate this situation is and how precise we must be in our language. The president's comments were well-intentioned. The welfare of the troops, our troops and their safety, and the integrity of the UN mission were to the forefront of his mind, I'm sure. However, I would suggest, from a soldier's point of view, that they would probably have been unhelpful. And what I mean by that is they could be interpreted as inflammatory. And this is why the UN would have issued this statement. There's no sense in creating additional antagonism at a time when UNIFIL forces need to liaise and communicate with all parties to the conflict. And it would be no help to some beleaguered young Irish officer or sergeant who is attempting to liaise with Israeli counterparts, who may have read a report in one of their own media about the Irish president accusing them of targeting UN forces.
So
that's
Declan,
not to say that they haven't before, but let's leave the wiggle room for our troops to do the necessary negotiating and navigating.
What good can the Irish soldiers do at present out there?
It's a relevant question. The way to interpret this is, unlike some who I think have a particular side in this conflict, who keep decrying the UNIFIL ability to do anything and say that they can't uphold their mandate, etc. UNIFIL is not a Chapter 7 mission. It's not a peace enforcement mission. It's a classic old school peacekeeping mission. Lightly armed troops, largely to protect themselves with those arms, trying to apply a mandate to keep warring parties from going south of the Litani River or operating south of the Litani River. They're not configured to disarm or to engage in direct combat. Both parties were expected to keep to their end of the agreement, because this mutual keeping to the agreement was to ensure the security of both. By being there, UNIFIL are the eyes and ears of the international community. They would not prevent conflict, but they would limit the worst of the conflict. There is no UNIFIL in Gaza, which allowed Israel to engage in complete control of operations, control of the air, control of movements, but most importantly, control of the narrative. The history of Irish involvement in UNIFIL has been one of accurate observation and reporting that allowed the international community to know what was happening in order to facilitate meaningful negotiations that led to things like the Oslo Accords, which again limited the conflict.
So Declan, now, do you think should they stay there?
Absolutely. The key point is this. In addition to all of that, which some might consider highfalutin stuff, the reality is during these times, and during times like Operation Accountability in Grapes of Wrath, where there were seriously heavy bombardments and airstrikes in the 90s in that area, and during the previous two Israeli invasions of Lebanon that the Irish were there for, the Irish and their partner nations in UNIFIL rendered necessary medical support to the civilians. They navigated and negotiated on behalf of civilians that needed to leave the region. They provided a measure of support and succor for those vulnerable civilians who can't leave, the elderly, the sick, the infirm, those who are the most powerless. They're the only ones left down there now, and there's quite a number of them. They're the ones who will suffer the most.
Okay, Hannah McCarthy, I want to bring Hannah back in.
Just one final point here. If we really value the concept of a values-based foreign policy, then we have to support our troops and give them every necessary support for them to continue the mission that they're doing.
Last word to you, Hannah.
So I've been to that outpost before, and the one thing I would say about that area is that a lot of the local Lebanese, they are somewhat suspicious of the UN peacekeepers there already, because from their point of view, there are peacekeepers in this border area inside Lebanese territory, but there are no peacekeepers in northern Israel. And they already, and part of this is Hezbollah has spread this kind of messaging before, but, you know, there's a perception that, you know, they are doing surveillance for Israel. And I think optically, if Irish peacekeepers get out of the way to allow Israel to, you know, engage in this kind of, you know, full battle with Hezbollah fighters, I think that will be hard to it'll be hard to get back trust from the local community again.
It looks like they're taking the Israeli side by getting out of the way.
And again, this is it is already a climate that I would say is quite distrustful. It is not an easy place for the peacekeepers to get around because of, you know, distrust from some of the local communities. And I think, yeah, the optics of getting out of the way to allow Israel to, you know, engage in this kind of direct ground battle with Hezbollah, I think that could, you know, affect trust.
Thank you very much, Hannah McCarthy, Declan Parr.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.